Welcome back, everybody, to Hoops HD. Here we are in the heart of the college basketball. Wait.
Yeah, it is.
Heart of some season.
What's the countdown to? I haven't been to the website today.
I don't know. We're a long way away from the start of the college basketball season, aren't we, David?
I don't know. What's the countdown? Somebody look at Hoops HD and see.
We are off to another stellar start here on Hoops HD.
Yeah, over there to the left, there or to the right.
We are 133 days away from the start of the 2019-20 college basketball season.
We're already in mid-season form, though.
A month less than that if you want to count preseason games and practice or whatever, but that's practice. But I'm your host, Chad Sherwood, joined up top here by Joby Fortson and David Griggs. Down below here, we got John Tytel and John Stalica. This is our June off-season report where we are going to discuss anything and everything that's been going on in the world of college basketball. And Joby, you want to start things off? Because you're still the guy from the team that won the last game that was played.
wait a minute. We didn't win the NIT. Well, and it's kind of nice to be back at Hoops HD. I was, in Minnesota during the last show in April, so I couldn't exactly make it. So I apologize for not being here, but I got to have one of the best athletic experiences of my life and a weight lifted. And then we go on to win the lacrosse championship too. I think basketball is a little bigger, but yeah, hey, it's nice to be on top.
Lacrosse championship. We're actually coming up here on the end of the athletic year in just a week. The athletic year does switch over on July 1st. One more collegiate championship to decide in baseball that I'm watching at least as we record this.
Yep.
We want to discuss a few things, and one of the things of note was that the NBA draft just happened. And John T, let me bring you in here because you are our NBA draft expert. You posted all the previews, and I think you your predictions were dead on correct in the entire first round, as I recall correctly.
I got the first seven exactly right, which I assure you is a rarity just because there's always draft day trades, and I was happy about that. I didn't do so well with the rest of the getting them exactly right, except for Joby's friend Ty Jerome. But decent, and not a ton of surprises. Some of the biggies were that Cameron Johnson went so high, and his former UNC teammate Nasir Little went so low, and Bull Bull almost fell out of the whole freaking draft. But with so many trades, I think there were 17 trades, so it's hard to keep track of who the heck is on which team. I know there were a lot of ACC guys picking the first round to nobody's surprise. I hope to nobody's surprise. They're one of the best conferences, if not the best in the whole country. So we'll see how it plays out. A lot of hype about Zion down south in New Orleans. Hopefully he lives up to it because there's a lot of hype, but he's a lot of great players, so I like his chances.
Yeah, and David, I know you want to discuss some of the way the rules have changed in the relationship between college and the NBA draft, correct?
Well, yeah, and again, a recent rule, and it's great for the players, and overall I'm in favor of it, is that you can keep your name into the draft all the way up until about the middle of May. To kind of test the waters, to talk to agents, to talk to people that do the kind of work that Tytel does to see where they might be going. And, you know, so essentially they have a much longer time to make a decision as to whether or not to stay in. Tytel probably can speak more expertly to the exact rules. But what I kind of wanted to get at is for the schools where these guys are coming from, it kind of puts them in a little bit of a bind. Because they don't – I mean, these are obviously key players on college teams, and it's into May before they know if these guys are going to come back or not, and how do you react? Like, if they leave, they don't have a whole lot of time to sign anybody. So, again, it's just in looking at that, how has it impacted some of the schools, and how has it impacted some of the players, and is it good or bad overall? I think it's good overall, but there are some setbacks, I understand.
But I think, one of the rules that I think they also added was there's also a limited pool of agents where you're allowed to get in contact with in order to get into the draft. But one of the other odd things we found out was this only applied to players initially at D1 because it was actually someone at a D2 school in West Virginia that also went through one of those agents. So he actually had to get a waiver in order to be eligible again at his D2 school for next season.
I didn't hear that. Wow.
Oh, yeah, that's a new one for me also. But yeah. Joby, you're an ACC guy, and we just talked about how many ACC picks there were and, you know, your team having won the national championship. Yeah. But what do you think about that question that David threw out there? You're kind of leaving these schools in the lurch until past where we used to.
It's a real life thing that happened at the University of Virginia this year. Mamadi Diakite put his name in, did probably the smart thing by pulling back out because some, as Titel off screen point out, some are even projecting him as a late number one next year. I don't know if that'll happen, but it'll get his opportunity. But Diakite's spot was basically held. Everybody knew the other three, Guy, Jerome, and Hunter, were gone. And as a result, because he came back late and got in, actually Guy's spot now is permanently gone. There was still some talk there. Virginia couldn't get a transfer point guard. So they only have one point guard on the roster, Kia Clark. They missed out on people like Terrell Allen, who I think will be very good, UCS point guard, very good at Georgetown. Would have been a very good fit, and probably Virginia likely would have had a good shot at beating Georgetown out for him. It is an issue, but David's right. It's good for the kids at the bottom line, and I'm a proponent of this because a kid like Diakite doesn't make a mistake that could cost him millions of dollars. Talk about the kid. I think he might be another year under Bennett where he's probably going to be the leading scorer or one of the leading scorers. Will likely get him a better draft position as opposed to a guy who was not even invited to the camp, would not have even sniffed a second round, and probably not would have had trouble even in a summer league spot.
Yeah, well, and Titel, what about that, though? You know, you've got these limited number of scholarships per team. What do I do? Do I leave it open? Do I give that scholarship to somebody else? And now if the kid comes back, I'm stuck. I got to throw somebody off a scholarship. There is a drawback to it, isn't there?
So Joby gave us the player's perspective, which is very important, obviously. I'm going to go with the other side on the coach's perspective. Put yourself in Juwan Howard's shoes. May 22nd, almost 1 month ago, he gets hired to replace John Beilein at his alma mater, Go Blue. Now, think about this. He gets the job, and instead of easing into the process or worrying about all the regular recruiting, he looks at his roster. Brazdeikis, Poole, and Matthews all declared for the draft. He's got three big spots where, like, he can't give them away because those are three key guys for his team if they come back. Unfortunately for him, none of them came back, so now he's got to scramble, like, literally weeks into his job to try to build his roster from scratch. Like, I'm glad they hired him. I think he's going to be good there. I think it's going to be a rough little first year because he's losing three guys and starting over from square one.
Well, David, is there a solution to this, or is this just going to have to be the way that coaches are going to have to learn how to work around it?
If there is a solution, I really don't know what it is. I mean, it is, in one sense, these are the caliber players you want on your team, and I think coaches are going to continue to recruit them and take that risk for obvious reasons. But like Titel just described, this is going to be a common tale from here on out. Like, what do you do when it's that late in the calendar year before you realize if you're going to have a player or not? It used to be you kind of knew a little almost immediately after the season was over whether or not a player was going into the draft as to whether or not you needed to replace them. Now you don't. And like he just said, I mean, not to just repeat it, but we're into the summer. School is starting in less than 2 months, and you're still looking for players. There just aren't any left. I got one more. Okay, another interesting note here, okay. I thought that this was going to be curbed a little bit. It has a little bit, but not as much as I hoped. I guess you saw 45 players who stayed in the draft went undrafted. You kind of hate to see that. They're done. College careers are over. They would have had big years and been key players on good teams had they come back. You kind of hate to see a player in their career that way.
Well, I mean, is there an argument to be made here that we should change the rule even further the other way? Stalika, should we change the rule and just say, if you don't get drafted, you can go back to school, period?
I think that's a rule similar to what they have as far as baseball goes, where if you're not drafted but you don't hire an agent, you should be allowed to go back.
Yeah, Chad, I mean, I like John's comment. Yeah. It's not even the undrafted component here that we should think about. If a kid doesn't have guaranteed first-round money, I like the fact that baseball players have the choice to be able to say, hey, I want to go to Vanderbilt or Michigan to pick the two teams that are playing for the national title. I want to go back and go to Vandy because I was drafted in the 30th round. And I think if I go to Vandy and stay in that great program. It's a great baseball program. And I learned under those coaches, I think I can be an eventual first or second round pick with really good money. I think the same could be said for those in the second round. Bol Bol, perfect example. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how welcome he would have been back because he was always a one and done and got hurt. But Bol Bol, I think even though he was drafted, would like to come back to Oregon or just enter the transfer portal. If or some option if there's not a spot at Oregon for him.
Well, but
I don't think you want to completely go by the baseball rules, because what happens is if you decide you're going to go to college, you have to go for at least 3 years, which is going to be pretty problematic as far as hoops go. Yeah.
Well, but there's a big money difference here also. If you are drafted, NBA draft 2 rounds, you're probably going to be on an NBA roster and making NBA money. If you're the 30th round draft pick in the baseball draft, you're going to be playing on some rookie league team making, what, $1,000 a month? I mean, there's a huge, Tytel, you're nodding your head, there's a huge money difference here between baseball and basketball, isn't there?
There is, and that's why, like, you feel bad for guys who tumble in the first round. I was talking to a coworker today who's a UNC fan and alum, and he felt bad about Little, and he's like, I wonder if he regrets it. I'm like, dude, he's got a guaranteed contract, and instead of being on a bad team high in the first round, he's on a good team later in the first round. I don't think he has any regrets whatsoever. He might have cost himself $1 million or $2 million, which is obviously serious money. He's still doing fine. Feel bad for Bol Bol, who fell tumbled into the second round, or for the guys like Kobe said who went undrafted, because they, like, I hope they get a job in Europe or something. Otherwise, like, I don't know what they're going to do, like, to feed their family or themselves.
Yeah. And remember, second-round draft picks often don't make the team.
Yeah, I did have a question about baseball. I'm not an NBA guy. I don't know. This might rock the foundation a little too much. But in baseball, if a player does not sign with you or opts to return to college, doesn't the team get that pick over again next summer? So I don't even know who took Bol Bol. But, like, that team wouldn't be out him. They would be without him, but next year they would get that pick in that spot over again.
I think it only applies to the first several rounds of the baseball draft. I don't think it applies all the way down through the 85th round or however far they go. But
okay,
but if you don't, the kid doesn't sign a baseball, they do get a compensatory tip, similar compensatory pick the following
year. And I'd be fine if, you know, somebody, if a team drafts a player like Bol Bol and I don't, the next year they pick again at the end of the second round. Again, extra pick the second round. Fine.
Well, let's move on to one other topic, the breaking news of the past few days here. And Sleek, let me bring you in because you are our Big East guy, and your conference is about to be expanding to 11 teams from what we're hearing, with the University of Connecticut coming back home, or not really back home, because but rejoining their former brethren in the Big East.
This is where I wish we did have our colleague Lee/Zach to filibuster for about 10 minutes. But by the same token, this is going to have a ripple effect, not only in that UConn is going to be coming home to the Big East. The Big East probably is going to go to a full 20-game round-robin schedule now. And this is also going to put the American in a position to decide, should we stay at 11 full-time members and go 20 games ourselves? Do we look for someone like maybe a VCU, St. Louis, or Dayton to fill the void? But getting back to UConn, this is going to have huge ramifications for the Big East, because now you're likely looking at a scenario where you're going to be restructuring their TV deal, and conference tournament tickets for the Big East are just became that much more impossible to get with UConn fans returning to Madison Square Garden come March.
Yeah, that would be a reason to leave them out there alone, not to keep their fans out of Madison Square Garden, isn't it? But David, what he mentioned there, that the idea of this 20-game conference schedule, we saw it start last year with the Big Ten, and we're getting more and more of these now.
I'm not a fan in general. I mean, I just don't like that it limits the opportunity for inter-regional games and marquee out-of-conference games. And what we've kind of seen is that, well, it's not the bye games that are being replaced. It's the other types of games. It's the games against top-notch mid-majors. Not that we had a lot, but it seems like there's fewer now. I just think that, I would like for it to be more than a third of the season that's out of conference games, but we're trending in this direction, and I really don't know why. It's just the Big Ten said they were going to 20, and the ACC is like, oh, well, we need to go to 20, and there seemed to be this thinking, if not at the Big East administrative level among the fans, well, what are we going to do now that everybody's going to 20? We need another team. It's like, what did going to 20 do for the Big Ten that playing at 16 or 18 didn't do for them in all the years prior to last year?
Well, let me put it to you this way. If you're a conference like the Big Ten or the Big East, playing 20 games in conference can actually be a good thing. But there's a reason why Gonzaga went down to a 16-game conference schedule, so they could schedule up for that same reason.
But Sisley, like, I'll take issue with you on that one. Gonzaga's problem, the reason they wanted less games is because they were stuck playing the, you know, the Santa Claras and the, I don't know, the Pacifics and the Portlands and you know, in the Big East, at least you are going to be playing the Marquettes and the Villanovas and the Xaviers twice, and maybe you don't have to schedule as hard non-conference anymore because you've got two more quality games already.
Well, that's what I don't like about it. You shouldn't just not schedule hard out of conference.
Well, I think we also have to pay attention to a team like Villanova in the future. Is do they continue their Big Five obligations, or are they going to water that down potentially?
Chad, a real life, and that's a great point, John, a real life example is playing out in Charlottesville with the defending national champions. Last year, the out-of-conference schedule was a very solid out-of-conference. Now, some of these teams didn't live up to expectations, but they're real games. GW, Middle Tennessee State, Dayton, Wisconsin, Maryland, VCU, South Carolina on the road. Pretty decent out-of-conference.
Yeah.
This year's out-of-conference is the return game of South Carolina at home. Vermont, okay. And you play in a tournament where you start with UMass, get probably Arizona State after that, and get Purdue. That's okay. But then you've got Navy, Columbia, and an awful James Madison team. No VCU. You know, what gets cut is VCU and GW. That's who got cut. And the final game will likely be a MEAC, Towson, Coppin State sort of game, a bye game. I'm rooting for a UMBC game.
Yeah, and I think that's a great, that's a great point here. And Tytel, let me ask you about that same point, though. It's, you know, we are not seeing these teams, saying we're keeping our quality games, but they're keeping the bye games and getting rid of the quality non-conference games. Isn't that watering everything down?
It is. I mean, I want to see teams play a full conference schedule, I suppose. Like, I mean, Arizona's tricky because when you have 11 other members of the Pac-12, that's 22 if you want to do a full round robin, which I don't think is doable. And by the same token, like, do I want to see us play, like, I mean, obviously we're going to play the Sun Devils twice a year. I want us to play, like, the big boys like UCLA and Washington, but I don't know how to divvy it up in terms of who gets cut or not. I also want to see good non-conference games. I mean, the past couple of years, we've played Gonzaga, which maybe 10 years ago was a nice little rivalry. Now it's, like, arguably the biggest or best game on our schedule, and I would hate to see opportunities like that disappear just for the chance to play, like, a Cal team that starts 0-15 in Pac-12 play. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Well, and I think it hurt the Big Ten for the teams that actually continued to schedule. We thought Purdue was done and dusted. You know, all of us would have thought after the way they started, because they played a hellacious out-of-conference schedule. And they did not necessarily perform great in that out-of-conference schedule. I think they got one quality win out of it. But when they turned it on the turn in the Big Ten, you know, with that 20, that helped. But here's the thing. If they played patsies, I doubt they get the seed level they get. I doubt they get a protected seed if they played nothing but patsies.
I agree with that. And then when you look at Indiana and you look at Nebraska and you look at some of the other teams that, well, maybe not Nebraska, but
Penn State.
Penn State, another one. It seemed like there just wasn't enough out of conference games to distance itself from everybody else and establish itself. Because here's the thing, every conference game, you're going to go 500 in your conference games. So if you go from 16 to 18 to 20, that's potentially 28 less wins for the league. And I see the extreme upside to adding UConn. You know, there's a lot of natural rivalries there. They're a basketball-centric school. A lot of the – I mean, I think that they're going to actually increase the ratings and increase the TV contract maybe as soon as by the end of the week. But part of me thinks that I don't like in general, not just – and I'm not just picking on the Big East. In general, I'm not happy with the 20-game schedule formats. We'd seen it before, albeit not from power conferences, and everyone that had ever done it, namely the SoCon and the Metro Atlantic, dialed it back. And are we going to see a point to where if there's a 2 or 3 year run where you know these teams are missing the NCAA tournament and the stated reason is because of what they did or didn't do out of conference – are we going to see these schedules go back to 18 or 16 or whatever?
Well, you know, the Big East really had struggled with only the 18-game schedule. I mean, they only won 2 out of the last 4 national championships.
So. Yeah. And I think last year they didn't even send half the teams to the tournament. They only sent 4. So, I really wish Zach was here so I could say things like, you know, this is going to water down the Big East. And, this is a great opportunity for the American. They could add Central Connecticut. It would upgrade the football and win that market. I mean, I really, really, really wish Zach was here. But
Civil conflict goes away, Dave.
We lost a huge rivalry here, Dave. This was bigger than Kansas, Missouri, was it not?
I think it was that UConn UCF rivalry and the civil conflict, the most pathetic made up rivalry I've ever heard of, is going away. Everything that rivalries are not about, this was about, and I just hate that it's over.
Well, let me say this though: I'm not necessarily sold that it has to go away because all indications are UConn is actually going to go independent but remain in FBS. It's not like they're going to be going down to FCS. I think someone had said there were rumors they would possibly join the MAC for football, but they're not about to add like 3 or 4 non-conference games in basketball like UMass had to do just to maintain affiliate membership.
But again, we won't have the civil conflict in basketball, John. So that is, you know, that was, you know, I don't know what the hell that was, but David,
it was marvelous.
What we may see, and there's already some rumblings here about this, is the schedule's actually expanding because there's some rumblings about instead of having to play in a tournament to get to your 31 games, just letting everyone play 31 games, whether you're in an exempt tournament or not.
Yes.
Especially because some of the exempt tournaments may only give you 3 games right now, or may give you 4 games, but 2 of those games are against non-D1 opponents as they just try to fill these things out. So there may be a way we get some of these extra non-conference games back a little bit through a bigger schedule.
Right. And if we were going out to a flat 31 that was proposed, it's not officially defeated, but it's defeated. I don't think we're going to go to a flat 31, and the rules for exempt tournament games are changing. The rule is going to be 29 regular games. You can get to 31 if you play in a 4-team, essentially, if it's a 4-team 2-game event, you can go out to 31.
Okay.
Or if it's an 8-team 3-game event, you can go out to 31.
You don't have to have 4 games in that event anymore.
Yeah, campus games are going away. I'll keep it in layman's terms. We're losing campus games. You can still be in 31 games in an exempt event. And instead of 2 weeks, it's going to go down to 12 days.
Okay.
But the 31 flat schedule that the ACC proposed, it didn't pass. And the reason it didn't pass is because they just don't know what the hell they're doing.
I guess there's a few other issues we want to hit on. Stalica, you have some news about some movement among D1 teams, right?
Well, there's a D1 team that's going to be moving around, and you also have another D2 team that's going to be coming up in the near future. UMKC is also going to be going back to their roots, and that's going to be in the Summit League where they'll be leaving the WAC.
When you think Mountaintops, when you think Summit, you think Kansas City.
But I think a more significant move that's also going to hit some of us locally is actually going to be Bellarmine University making the jump up from D2 up to the Atlantic Sun in Division I starting in 2020-21. This is a team that used to be in the Great Lakes Valley Conference along with current D1 programs like NKU and Fort Wayne.
David, did we hit all our news and notes for the night?
Those are the big ones. The other thing we should mention, although not go into depth, what's happening out in California, this legislation to get to allow student athletes to make money off of their likenesses. Mark Emmert, the NCAA released a statement saying that if they don't modify it or if they go through with it, the teams in California who allow their athletes to do that may not be eligible for NCAA championship events, which creates an interesting conflict here. Can they bar a school that is abiding by a court order from participating in a championship event? We don't really know what's going to go on out there, but I think the focal point, that way more so than the FBI probes, these pay-for-play court cases, is what's occupying the NCAA's time and energy, and they are digging in. They're not backing down. They're not making any sort of modifications. We talked about that last month a little bit. We'll probably talk about it more throughout the summer, maybe even get Andy Schwartz back on here. But, you know, nothing's been decided, but it's kind of setting up for an interesting showdown.
Yeah, I think we have some real interesting times ahead here as we go through this whole pay-for-play issue. But I guess on that note, let me turn to each of you for any other final thoughts or anything else you want to mention here for the evening. Joby, let me start with you.
Yes, well, it is the summertime, and that is the time for lists. List off your – every person, list off your – top 10 list of, you know, best stadiums, best uniforms. Well, I got into the fun of it as well, and I am following, if KenPom can do it, if Sagarin can do it, I have started putting together a predictive analysis that will serve as a basis until the net is up and running for the J&G.
We have a new metric for Julie coming.
And your final four. This also shows, because there's a lot of weight for the prior season, because I don't believe the fourth team I will say will be in the Final Four, is your Virginia Cavaliers, followed by Duke at number three, Kentucky at number two, and I think we all know number one is Tom Izzo's Michigan State Spartans. So.
Well, there we go. Forget about next season. It's over. Joby already told
you. You already know that Michigan State, you know, will be and player of the year, I think, will be sitting on that team as well, at least briefly.
Yeah, and got to plug this as well. You do football ratings as well.
I do. And right on the site. They are not nearly as accurate as the basketball.
As we get to football season.
But I'm seeing Ohio State. Hey, Ohio State, how'd you like your bid last year for the playoff?
Sleeka, let me hit to you next.
Well, this will in part involve college basketball, but also go a little bit off of the beaten track right here. A couple weeks ago at the U.S. Open, Gary Woodland actually won the title and held off Brooks Koepka, who was going for a third straight title. Interesting side note about Woodland was he actually started his career at Washburn as a college basketball player, but considering his first game was against Kansas, going up against the likes of Kirk Heinrich, I'd say he made a pretty good career move going to golf.
That's true. John T.
So as long as we're doing lists, I think one of the lists that you'll see is the best transfers. Obviously, we've had several make their decisions already over the past few months. There's still two big ones by my count. Kerry Blackshear Jr. at Virginia Tech, formerly at Virginia Tech.
Yep.
You might remember him. He almost beat Duke single-handedly in the Sweet 16 with 18 points and 16 boards. He is still choosing. And Quentin Grimes, who was a freshman last year at Kansas, he was a McDonald's All-American in 2018. He scored 15 against Auburn in the tourney last March. He's still deciding. They could both come down any day now. Might be another couple of weeks or so. I don't think they're big enough names that they're going to shift the balance of power and put a team that wasn't in Joby's Final Four into Joby's Final Four, but they are guys who can come in and start once they're eligible and contribute big time at a big time school.
All right. Definitely true. And David, you want to finish us off for the month?
Well, two things. One is just, again, what's going to happen with UConn's football team. I think they're planning on joining the Big East, which would make them the only FBS football team in the Big East. And I still don't think they'll win the Big East football. I wish Zach was here. I really wish he was. But secondly, to rant a little bit, one of the other rule changes that did not come through dealt with exhibition games. You may recall 2 years ago, a lot of teams, and it was actually sparked by Kansas and Missouri, were receiving waivers to play what amounted to a third exhibition game. It could be against a D1 team. It could be in front of an open crowd, and all the money had to go to charity. Last year, they dialed it back and said, well, you can still do that, but you don't get the extra game. And the same holds true for this year. They did not approve or would not consider a third exhibition game for teams. And I would like to know why. What's wrong with a third practice? I think it got people and players a chance to play and made them more ready for the start of the season. It raised a lot of money for charity. I was donating more to charity than I normally do. I think that the matchups that were created, Kansas and Missouri, Texas A&M in particular, generated a lot of excitement for October and November games that didn't matter, that didn't exist before. There's no good reason for them not to do that. I'm kind of pissed that they didn't. So the way it's going to be this year and for the foreseeable future is that you still get two games. One can be a charity game, but there's so much less incentive to schedule that charity game when it's not an extra third game. And I really think it sucks that they did not approve that.
That would have been our chance for the civil conflict again as well. But I guess on that note, I do want to thank everyone for joining us. We'll be back again sometime next month. Don't know when, but some point during July with another off-season podcast. A lot more content coming. A lot of interviews that have been on the site from Tytel. So if you ever read them, scroll down and do so. But on behalf of John Tytel, Joby Fortson, John Salica, David Griggs, I'm Chad Sherwood. Thanks for joining us. And we'll talk to you again real soon.